I have to wait again for the wavelets to clear. But when they do, I can see not only what must be city streets, but also the roofs of buildings, all laid out beneath me. It's hard to make out details through the water, but there's no doubt that it's a city trapped under the chilly lake waters. My head pops up again, and I gulp a few deep breaths. On the last one, I hold it, and tuck down in a dive, kicking hard, striving for the rooftops. The pressure builds as I swim down, 10, 20 feet, until my ears pop and equalize. I shake my head and work my jaw until my ears feel normal. I could go down a little farther, but my lungs are starting to cry out for air. Reluctantly, I kick back to the surface. "The city is down there!" I shout to my mom and friends waiting for me on shore. But it is too far away for them to hear me clearly, so I start the long swim back. Their shouted questions become clearer as I near the shore, but I save my breath for swimming. Part of me wishes I'd kept my revelation to myself. This is a competition, after all. Maybe we're mostly proving that we personally have what it takes, but there's also an element of showing that we're better than the other people on the trial. Having grown up in Eden, Mom and I are at a disadvantage. These people have been swimming their whole lives, and I know they can swim farther, dive deeper, hold their breaths longer than I can. Now that I've shown them the secret city, they'll easily surpass me. Maybe I should have gone off with them to search the mountains, then doubled back to investigate the lake on my own, or just with Mira and Mom. No, I decide. That's exactly the kind of thing that Xander would do. But these people are my friends, my neighbors. I'll be living with them for the rest of my life. And what good is a community whose members don't look out for each other? I wouldn't be happy with myself if I didn't help my friends. I made the right choice. I can only hope that the elders look at it that way when they judge. I stagger out of the lake, shivering, and my mom rubs my arms to warm me up as I tell them what I found. Some are skeptical, thinking it was just rocks, that my mind saw what I wanted to see. No, I assure them. I've had too much experience doubting my reality to be easily fooled. That's a city down there. We waste no time in heading out, agreeing to swim out together, then once we're over the city to explore on our own as we search for an artifact to present for the trial. As we're about to go in, I hear an unwelcome voice.
What are you doing? Going for a swim? That's no way to win.
It's Xander, strolling back to see what we're up to.
Did you find the city already?
I ask with mock sweetness.
Well done!
He looks at my sopping wet body, and then his eyes widen as he understands.
Beneath the surface, eh?
I expect him to be mad that he didn't figure it out first, but he just takes off his boots and shirt and starts toward the water's edge.
Don't start feeling smug, city scum. You might have found it, but I'm the best swimmer in Harmonia. You don't stand a chance. I bet your patient died on the last test.
He laughs and steps confidently into the water. Lata, everyone's friend, calls,
"Look out! It drops off!"
Just a moment too late, and I have the gratification of seeing Xander plunge down just like I did. Then we're all in the water, striking out for the deep. It feels almost like a game now, all of us swimming together. Almost like the capture the flag game I won yesterday morning. Part of me is enjoying the easy camaraderie of people my same age. But part of me remembers how yesterday's game could have turned out. So I take care to stick to Mom and Mira, and we all stay away from Xander. He's right. He's much more confident than any of us in the water. I'm just glad he's so focused on getting the best artifact and being ranked first that it doesn't occur to him to try to drown me. As soon as we're over the flooded city, they start to dive down. I wait, watching, to see what they come up with, taking advantage of the opportunity to rest as I tread water. They are down longer than I can hold my breath, but one after another, they come up empty-handed.
The bottom is too far,
Lata says as she gasps for breath.
I can almost get to the rooftops, but not any farther.
Everyone else has the same report.
though he doesn't deign to say anything. Xander hasn't retrieved anything either. I can see his scowl as he takes 3 deep breaths in rapid succession and dives down for another try. I make a few attempts, but I can get no farther than the others, not even reaching the tops of the tallest roofs. There aren't any artifacts up there that I can see, even if I could reach it. I start to consider whether I can pry off a piece of a building. Mom, as usual, has some good ideas that rely on teamwork.
If we weighted ourselves, we could sink faster, she muses.
That way, we could get to the bottom before we ran out of air and got exhausted.
Maybe if we held rocks.
But how would we get them here? Someone asks. We can't swim with rocks.
We could build a boat, or no, a raft. Something just strong enough to carry the rocks, and we could push it out here, and take turns going down.
They like the idea, but the sun is sinking lower in the sky. We might only have a couple of hours until sunset. Could we build a viable raft in time?
Or we could fish for things,
Mom offers a little desperately.
The way ancient people used to catch fish for food. Make a line with vines, weigh it down, fashion a hook for the end. If we drag the streets, we might snag something.
They are good ideas if we had plenty of time. I still felt like there must be a clue in Elder Knight's message.
What did she say about a dome?
Go beneath a dome, Mira quotes. I didn't see any domes, but if we can't reach street level, I don't know how we're going to get below a dome, even if we find one in the first place.
Her shoulders heave in an exasperated sigh, making the water around her ripple.
Some of the other testers are talking about heading back to shore, either to construct something, or in hopes that over the generations an artifact might have washed up on shore. It wouldn't be following the letter of the elder's instructions, but it might be better than nothing, they're saying. Mira looks undecided.
I'm not ready to give up, I tell her. There's more to this city than this little bit we've seen. I'm going to look for a dome.
What's the use if you can't even... she begins, but if I hear any more protests, I might give up. I start swimming farther out. Mom and Mira follow reluctantly. The few who are staying in the water float and watch. The water is surprisingly clear and still, but despite that, I can only see things more or less clearly straight below me. Beyond that, everything fades into a bluish blur. It is impossible to scan ahead, to search for anything resembling a dome. It will be a matter of luck if I find anything. I swim for a long time before I see directly beneath me a roundish golden smudge that looks different from the square and rectangular tops. I don't want to announce it yet. Everyone would come over, and they'd be disappointed if I'm wrong. And maybe there's a part of me that wants to succeed all on my own first, before I help out anyone else, even if I will share my information eventually. So, without a word, even to Mira and my mom, I dive down to investigate. Once I'm down about 10 feet, I can see that I was right. It is a burnished half-sphere, with lines in the same color radiating out from it. From above, it looks like a resting octopus. I kick as hard as I can, pull with my arms, and still my lungs are burning long before I reach the golden dome. Maybe, if I gave it everything I got, I could reach the dome, but I don't believe I'd be able to get back to the surface afterward. At least, not conscious. I've read that in the salty oceans, people float easily, buoyed up by the water. If this was salt water, I would probably rise back to the top with minimal effort. But in this fresh water, it is almost as much of a struggle to rise as it is to swim down. Even if I could make it to the dome, I'd have to save something for the return trip. It's no good, I tell Mom and Mira as they swim over. It's there, but I can't make it. Mira tries several times, resting between each attempt, warning me about the dangers of blacking out if she doesn't give her body enough time to get rid of excess carbon dioxide. We float together, despondent. My only consolation is that no one else has figured out a way to get down to the sunken city. Mom never runs out of hopeful ideas. We could get hollow reeds and build a long breathing tube,
We could fill gourds with air and weigh them down with rocks at intervals of 10 feet. It might be enough for one breath. Mira shakes her head.
We only have another couple of hours.
Already, the sun's low angle makes it a little harder to see under the water. It would be a lot easier if it were directly overhead.
Well, if we fail, at least we all fail together, I say.
Maybe that is part of the test, to accept that some things aren't possible. Or she wants us to come up with something clever, like the artifact that caused the most damage to the environment isn't in the drowned city, it's us.
Clever, Mira says, floating lazily.
I run through Elder Knight's words again. She clearly said to go beneath the dome, that it would make it easier. What else did she say? Oh yeah, trust that the wisdom of the elders wouldn't allow us to come to harm. I sit up suddenly, or would have sat up if I wasn't floating on my back. As it is, I mostly make a big splash as I curl myself upright. I'm going to try one more time, I say, trying to keep the excitement out of my voice. This might not work, and if it doesn't, if I tell them, they might try to talk me out of it. Or Mira might volunteer, being the better swimmer. Which does make sense, but since I thought of it, I should be the one to take the risk. I won't put either of them in danger. I slow my breathing, slow my heart, force myself to be calm. 5 very long, deep breaths. Then 3 very quick, shallow ones, with strong exhales. Then finally, one last, deep, full breath. Quite possibly, my very last breath. Ten. I wish I had been swimming all my life. Even in this stressful trial, the utter peace that seems to come over me as soon as my head is submerged is astounding. My pulse slows automatically. My thoughts become somehow more calm and more focused. I feel as if I've been welcomed into a different world, a weightless dimension with no sharp edges, where everything flows smoothly, even my thoughts. I pull myself deeper beneath the surface with strong, slow strokes, kicking my feet with a rhythm like an easy jog. The golden dome looms closer with each stroke. This time, I make it farther than I have before, so close that I can make out the designs embossed on the dome. In the center, there's what looks like a starburst. Around the outside, I can see letters, but I'm not close enough to make out what they say. My lungs are aching, and every part of my body is telling me to kick to the surface. Every part, except my brain. Elder Knight says we are animals, but I wonder if this little difference is what actually sets us apart from our wild brethren. That we can put aside our survival instincts in search of a higher purpose. Any animal would know that if it kept swimming down right now, it might die. I'm animal enough to know that too, but human enough to ignore it and keep going. A few more strokes, a few more kicks, and my limbs start to tingle from lack of oxygen. Now I can make out the words on the dome. Supernova systems. Another kick, and I can press my hand on the dome, smooth and metallic, untouched by corruption, after all this time under the water. My diaphragm is convulsing now, my body desperate to breathe. It takes every ounce of self-control to force my lungs not to take a suicidal breath. I've committed this far, trusting to Elder Knight's words. I have to go on. Using the very last of my strength, I kick as I slide along the outer edge of the dome, using the raised designs and letters to pull myself to the lower edge. Under the dome, Elder Knight said. I can feel the darkness creeping along the edge of my vision as with one last pull I glide under the dome and look up. To the shimmering ripples of the surface. A surface just a few feet above me. My trust was not misplaced. There's a pocket of air trapped beneath the golden dome. I rocket up into the air, the beautiful, blessed air, and take the sweetest breath of my life.
It tastes a little stale on my tongue, but I don't care. I made it. My faith paid off. It takes a moment for my vision to clear, as my brain relishes the oxygen, and my bloodstream flushes out excess carbon dioxide. When I look around, I'm amazed. This isn't just a little air pocket. The dome is the size of a large building. The entire testing group can easily breathe in here for hours while we make scouting trips down to street level. I duck my head and look below. The streets are still far below, but maybe some of us can make it, as long as we have this way station. I swim around the inside of the dome. It is like a covered swimming pool, and it is hard to remember that I'm in an air bubble deep underwater. The inner dome is the same burnished gold as the outside, darkly shining. Wait, it shouldn't be this light in here. I realize that the dome itself is illuminated, casting a sort of sunset glow over the interior. So there's a power source. The dome is held above the street by stout underwater columns. I see the remnants of what might have once been elevator tubes that would have brought people up from the street level. But for what purpose? And why is this dome still filled with air when the rest of the city is flooded? Then, about 10 feet above the waterline, I notice openings all around the dome. Those are the things that look like octopus arms radiating from the center. Tunnels, all branching out from the dome. It looks like the elevator system once brought people directly to the tunnels. But now all that is gone, except for crumbling ruins. However, there is a ladder carved directly into the side of the dome, leading to each tunnel opening. It feels strange to be at the mercy of gravity after the weightless water, I think, as I climb the ladder. Every sound echoes in this chamber. The ladder was probably used for maintenance crews, and is a bit awkward to navigate, but luckily the curve of the dome here isn't too extreme. Water drips off me, plinking into the water below. The tunnel is clear, air-filled like the dome, and stretches as far as I can see. And like the dome, the tunnel walls themselves are lit with a golden glow. From here, I can see straight into some of the other tunnels. They are clear too. I think I know what it is. An elevated transportation system. It must have ferried people all around long ago when this was a thriving city. Now the people are gone. But somehow, the system that kept air flowing and the lights on persists. Maybe it was solar-powered, and enough sun filters through the lake to power parts of the city. That's simply amazing. Or maybe the elders devised a way to reactivate part of the city just for the test. Either way, it gives us a chance to explore the way life used to be before most of humanity perished. I'm a little baffled, though. Even with advanced technology, is it possible that the city has been preserved so well throughout the 1,000 or so years since the eco-fail? Some of the city, made of materials that required maintenance and upkeep, has indeed crumbled away. But so much of it remains intact that it makes me suspicious. For a while, I poke down one of the tunnels. It's fascinating. Almost empty, but not quite. It looks like it has just been shut down for maintenance today. There's a food wrapper of some sort on the ground, and a stray piece of clear plastic wrap. Near the entrance is a poster made of a material I don't recognize, showing a happy family sitting on a checkered cloth by a riverbank. The mother and father are holding glasses of pale, pink, bubbly liquid, and the detail is so fresh, so perfect, that it makes me thirsty. The 5 children in the image are playing a game with a large, colorful ball. Children. More than one, to the same parents. Even though that is commonplace in Harmonia, seeing it here, so naturally, makes me feel an emotional little catch in my throat. I wonder what life was like in this city. Above the happy family, it says, "Welcome to Three Rivers." It seems like such a pleasant place. Sure, it was flawed, as all civilization was before the fail. It had waste and garbage, I'm sure. but it sickens me that the cheerful family in the picture must have been wiped out along with almost all of humanity. "Oh, Bic," I say aloud. "I just realized how long I've been down here. I want to explore more, but my mom and Mira must be frantic, thinking I've drowned." As I hurry back to the dome, I see a clear panel that gives me a view of the city below. The glass is a bit grimy, so I rub it with my sleeve and peer down at the remnants of a great city. There are boulevards where people would have strolled with their friends, shops and offices, all the trappings of bustling, comfortable life. There's an open area right below me, what looks like a kind of town square. Maybe there was a park where children once played. What happened to this place, I wonder? What happened to the people? I climb back down the ladder and lower myself into the water, taking deep, calming breaths before my long ascent. As I do, I take one last look around. There's another poster made of that strange, enduring material. This one is an exaggerated map showing the city's attractions. Here is a place for river rafting expeditions. There, a place for hot air balloon rides across the mountains. Restaurants, hotels, an amusement park, playgrounds, sports fields. This place must have been bustling in its heyday. The map shows domes like this one scattered throughout the town of Three Rivers, all connected by that tube system. I bet that the entire closed system has air and power in it. We can explore to our heart's content, at least until the sunset deadline. I better get back to tell everyone. Just as I'm taking my last preparatory breath, I see an inset in the main city map, showing the surrounding landscape. The city sits on the easternmost of three rivers that flow south until they almost converge. A star on the map says, "You are here." For a moment, I stare at that map, wondering how on earth the city went from a riverside town to a city beneath a lake. I leave before I come to any conclusions, but it nags at me as I swim up to the bright surface. Mom meets me halfway up, her face going from terrified to relieved the moment she sees me. She intercepts me in an embrace that is half hug, half clawing rescue as she drags me up to the sunlight. Panting, her eyes wide, she says with exasperation, "I want you to have freedom and adventures, Rowan, but there are some limits." I can't help but laugh, even as I sincerely apologize for the worry I caused. "Glad you're not dead," Mira says blandly, as her own face relaxes into a relief she tries to hide under flippancy. "Me too," I say. I had my doubts there for a minute, but Elder Knight said to trust her words, and it worked. Mom shakes her head. "I'm surprised you were able to trust the words of any authority at this point." "Believe me, it wasn't easy," I tell her. "People in charge have a reputation for lying, I've found." I tell them what I discovered, and after a brief consultation, Mira swims off to tell the others. A while later, most of us are under the dome, except for Lata, who swore she didn't have an ounce of energy left to keep going. I think it's just as much fear as exhaustion, though. There was a haunted look in her eyes. Even if we all went first, she'd never commit her faith to such a risk. I understood, and I didn't think any worse of her. Most normal people prefer a safe, comfortable life, and will embrace security even if it means giving up the possibility of something better. For just a second when he emerges in the air bubble under the dome, Xander catches my eye. I'm not sure what I see there. Maybe a grudging respect, combined with, and probably overwhelmed by, irritation that he owes this to me. Still, it is enough to make me think that maybe, after I've proven myself for the next 20 years or so, he might be brought to admit that everything from Eden isn't corrupt. For now, though, the best I think I can hope for is that if he catches me alone, he'll only break another finger, not my whole arm. Baby steps. We branch off into the tunnel system to search for artifacts. As the group separates, Mom shouts out a warning to remember the way back. Mom, Mira, and I stick together, of course, choosing the same tunnel section. There's a little dance as we figure out who is going to walk ahead,
The first person will naturally see any interesting detritus of society first, and maybe thus win the challenge.
You should go first, Mara says.
After all, you're the one who found this place.
How about we take turns? I suggest. Mom, the oldest, should go first, for the first 20 steps. Then you, then me, each for 20 steps.
Right away, Mom finds an electronics panel. Its small doors open, revealing wires and fuses. Mom pulls one of the fuses out.
Maybe this, she says.
It represents mankind's reliance on technology, which led them to neglect the environment.
It's a good choice, I think.
The next stretch seems empty, and I have the idea that the farther we get from the station, the more meager the pickings will be. These tubes were made for a sealed vehicle to move through. People would only be out in the stations, so it would only be there that they would leave their personal effects behind. I'm sorry about this, because it would have been nice to learn a little more about how they lived. I can see from the poster that they were really no different than us. People of the past are painted as monsters, hell-bent on their own destruction. But in the poster, they just look like people doing their best to be happy. Everything seems so peaceful and normal down here, as if the tunnel has just been shut down for maintenance and isn't buried under 30 feet of water. I wonder how this happened. I know from eco-history class that climate change melted the polar glaciers, made the water levels rise, but that would flood the coast, not an inland city. For a while, it looks like we might not find anything else interesting. Then, while Mira is in the lead, she gasps and bends down quickly, coming up with a small, shining thing.
What is it? I ask excitedly. Is it jewelry?
Mom and I both recognize it. In school, they showed us pictures of old pre-fail currency. We explain it to Mira as she turns the pretty silver coin over and over, letting the golden light emanating from the tube shine on the head embossed on one side, the angry-looking bird on the other.
So the metal itself isn't worth anything?
Mira asks, puzzled.
But you can exchange it for things like food and clothes?
In a world where everything is provided, where people work for the community, not for the reward, the concept of money is alien. She tosses up the coin and catches it neatly.
It only has value because everyone agrees it has value?
I nod and tell her how people would compete to have more money than their neighbors, how they would fight and kill for coins like this one, destroy the environment, start wars, let children suffer, all for the sake of getting more money.
Mira shudders.
I've definitely found my artifact, she says, pocketing the coin. When it's my turn to take the lead again, we hit a roadblock. Literally. The tunnel is blocked by what must have been the vehicle that once ran through it. All we can see is its bulbous back end. It blocks the entire path, except for a few inches all around. We have to turn back. Mom rubs my shoulder.
It's okay, you can have my artifact.
When I refuse, she says,
or pull something else from that panel, a wire or something.
No, I can't just copy you. I try to look hopeful, but as we retrace our steps, I'm feeling more and more glum. There isn't time to try another tunnel. It must be near sunset. The tunnel is completely bare. We missed nothing. Only at the last moment do I see something on the ground. Something small and forgotten by both the original inhabitants of Three Rivers City and by these people in the test. I scoop it up and shove it in my pocket. When we get back to the dome, I see that everyone has something. Xander keeps his find hidden in his cupped hands, so I'm guessing it must be good. Quinn has the biggest thing, a monitor as big as his chest, wires dangling from where he ripped it out of the wall. One person has what looks like a toy, a small figure of a curvy woman. Others have objects I don't immediately recognize, things that must have been useful so long ago, but are irrelevant and forgotten now. We return to the surface with our prizes, all except Quinn. Elated about his fabulous find, he doesn't stop to take physics into consideration. After a deep breath, he jumps from the ladder to duck under the dome and return to the surface. But he isn't strong enough to kick up with that extra weight dragging him down. I can see his panic as he tries to decide what to do as he sinks slowly,
wasting air and energy fighting the pull. He tries to get back to the dome, to take a breath and try again, to buy time to think of a way. But the heavy monitor pulls him past the rim of the dome. His only choice is to drop it, and I watch it disappear into the depths of the sunset lake as Quinn goes back into the dome. I know he'll search for something else, but he'll either come up empty-handed or too late. At least he's alive. The competitors shiver on the beach, comparing their finds. Not me. I keep mine tucked away. Xander struts up.
What did you find, City?
He asks with derision. I don't want to show him, and cover my pocket with my hand. He sees the protective gesture and grabs my hand away, and since it is my injured one, I can't fight him. I jerk my hand away before he hurts my fingers anymore, and he pulls my artifact from my pocket.
Look at that,
he crows, holding it up for everyone to see.
Garbage! That's all she can find, because that's all she is.
He throws my scrap of plastic wrap on the ground, where a breeze catches it. I have to chase it before it blows away, all dignity lost. I catch it at the feet of Elder Knight, and stand up slowly, holding out my offering.
Tell me why you chose that,
she commands in her serene voice.
I gulp, not wanting to admit that it was the only thing I could find at the last minute.
It shows the endurance of the temporary. I am pleased with that phrase, and go on more enthusiastically.
It is plastic wrap, used to cover one leftover piece of food, for maybe a day, and then thrown away. The next time someone wanted to cover food, they didn't reuse this one. They tore off another piece. It was easy, convenient, and deadly. Used for just a moment, this plastic is still here after all this time, as perfect as it was the day some mother tore it to wrap her child's sandwich. It will live longer than our species, probably. This artificial thing will get in oceans, in the bellies of whales, in our very bloodstream before it is gone. And when they used it, the people of long ago didn't care at all, as long as it made their lives easier. That was the attitude that brought about our destruction. Elder Knight closes my hand around my terrible treasure and gives me one simple nod. Then she addresses the others.
You have completed the trial of water, and I think you all understand why I did not name the test to you beforehand.
She chuckles.
Yes, that would have made it too easy.
Then, as the sun is sinking low on the horizon in a red and pink glow, she questions each person about their find. After a while, Quinn emerges, weary and empty-handed. I have no idea how mine compares to the other artifacts, but in the end, as Elder Knight passes by me again, she gives me a smile that buoys my spirits. When she is finished, she says,
I'm sure you know the routine by now. No need for sneakery or surprises. I have a meal laid out for you just beyond the trees. After you refresh yourselves, you'll be given a pill that will render you unconscious. When you wake, the next test will begin. I am proud of you all. Some of you have surprised me, for good or ill. But you are all showing your true natures, your strengths and weaknesses, and the community of Harmonia embraces all of you. Enjoy your respite, and may you show your best selves in the third and final test.
She points us to the feast, then drifts away into the forest. I sit with Mom and Mira and a couple of others, talking about the first two tests. And when the feast is over, when I've drunk my fill of honeyed tea, I reach, along with the others, to take one of the pale little pills on a dish at the center of the table. XI. Slowly, I drift toward consciousness. The first two trials have been pretty extreme, so I can only imagine that they must have something almost impossible for us on the third and final test. Just like the other times, I have no memory of being transported. I could be anywhere. The ocean, a desert. As I lay in a semi-conscious haze, letting the tranquilizer wear off, I try to prepare for every possibility. By the time I manage to open my eyes, I'm ready for anything.
Air or fire? Yarrow asks.
Maybe both, I think sleepily. What, then falling off a cliff? Into a volcano? The one thing I'm not prepared for is waking up in a soft, comfortable bed. With Xander. I scramble off the bed, literally brushing my arms with my hands in revulsion as if something disgusting was crawling on them. What the beck is going on? Xander snores away. This has to be a test. What, a test of your patience? A test to see if you'll murder him in his sleep? I have to admit to Yarrow that the idea has some attraction. Then I have to pull myself together and take stock of the situation. This looked at first like one of our traditional bubble houses, high up in a tree. But there are differences. This is a one-room structure, a simple sphere situated just under the canopy. I don't know what kind of tree we're in. It is some kind of conifer, maybe a relative of redwoods, but not as massive. Still, we're pretty high up, at least 50 feet, and there are no branches on the trunk below us. We're surrounded by the same kinds of trees. I see other one-room bubbles, just like this one, in other trees, none too close. Are there other candidates in there? Then I notice other differences about this structure, and the others I can see. While most bubble houses are wrapped around the trunk, integrating the tree into their architecture, this one is hanging suspended from a limb, like an ornament. Also, more troubling, there are no stairs. The only access is a hole in the bottom. In the room, there's only a bed, and a coil of rope. And Xander. So you strangle him, maybe? I wish. Fire. Air. Even with that guess, I do not immediately notice anything odd when the light around me seems to flicker. It is morning, and at first I think it's just the light filtering unevenly through the overhead limbs and the rest of the forest as the wind blows through them. Then something about the character of the light makes me take a second look. Fire. I've never seen a wildfire, but I envisioned it creeping insidiously along the ground with flames licking up tree trunks as they climbed skyward. I never imagined that a forest fire could come from above. Maybe it was sparked by lightning. Maybe there was a fire on the ground far away that sent up a shower of embers to rain down on the nearby trees. Whatever the cause, the ground is clear, but suddenly a raging fire is spreading with incredible swiftness through the tree canopy. Before my eyes, I see it jump from tree to tree and take hold until each tree looks like a giant matchstick. The fire is still some distance away, but it is coming closer. I have to get out of here. We, Yara reminds me, we have to get out of here. I might grumble a little, but there's no doubt about what I'm going to do. I shake Xander and shout, "Wake up!" No response. Inside my head, I can actually feel Yara grin wickedly. I shout at him again, but he lies insensible. Did they drug him more deeply than me? What other choice do you have? Yarrow asks with glee as I slap his face. The sound echoes in the bubble, but he doesn't respond. I hit him again, harder this time. Nothing. He's breathing, he has a pulse, but he's dead to the world. I run to the glass to check the fire's progress. In disbelief, I watch it reach one of the most distant bubble rooms. Is there anyone inside? Frantic, I press my nose to the glass and look for motion inside. I can't see anyone. Did they already escape? Or are they drugged too? The fire rages in the branches above the bubble. Suddenly, the bubble bursts, sending crystals of glass showering through the flames. The fire got so hot that it exploded. I flinch back, shielding my eyes, even though it is still far away. And still the fire comes closer, leaping to the next tree. In only a few minutes, it will be here. Okay, calm down, Rowan, Yarrow cautions. This is a test. First of all, you're probably not in any real danger, right? I wouldn't be so sure about that. I could have fallen off the cliff or drowned.
Maybe the elders take precautions, but there's risk of death in each of these tests. And second, you've been given the tools to pass each test if you know what to look for. Here it's easy, a climb and a rope. Just lower yourself down and escape the fire. She's right, of course. But what about the unconscious Sander? Leave him, Yarrow says. But I know she doesn't quite mean it. But if I can't wake him, what choice do I have? All I can do is climb down and hope that he wakes up in time. Or look for help. Yes, that's what I'll do. I tie the rope to the only possible anchor, the bed, and tug against it, testing its strength. Yes, the counterweight is enough to hold me. I try one more time to wake Xander, then give up. I'll have to figure out how to help him later. Then, just as I'm about to lower myself down with the rope, I see movement in the nearest of the bubble rooms. I run to the glass and peer through, expecting to see Mira or Mom or the other competitors. Instead, I see a bubble full of children. There are a dozen of them at least, and I am just close enough to make out their faces. They aren't children I know from Harmonia, but they remind me of them. One resembles Lilibet, all of 3 years old, a precocious girl who follows the elders everywhere, begging for stories. Another is reminiscent of Iani, a small boy of 10 with a passion for insects. He told me all kinds of interesting things about ants. I've gotten to know all the children of Harmonia in my time here. I don't know these children, but there's no doubt I have the same urge to protect them. And now many of them are trapped and in terrible danger. I wave my arms, signaling to them frantically. One sees me, and they all rush over to that side. I point to the approaching fire and mime climbing down a rope, but when the kids part, I can see that they have no bed, no rope, nothing in their bubble except their own sweet selves. Every instinct tells me to run to them, to reach them quickly, and then I'll find a way to help. But there's no way I can climb that tree. It's straight up, without branches, and the bark is too crumbly to offer any handholds. To climb it, I'd need to use the technique they use here to climb the redwoods to reach the beehives. They loop a length of rope around the trunk and their own hips, also holding the rope in each hand, and brace their feet against the bark. Then, in slow increments that require incredible strength, they fling the rope up the trunk a few inches, pull themselves up, and repeat the process over and over. Sometimes they wear special shoes with spikes to help brace against the tree, though the purists don't do that. I tried it once, and the results were laughable. I made it about 5 feet up and fell on my backside. But I've seen Xander do it. He and his brothers are masters at honey-gathering, and they can zoom up the tallest redwoods tirelessly. I can't save those kids, but Xander can. I have to get him down, somehow, even though he is unconscious. I have to lower him and hope he wakes up in time to save those kids. If I get him down and follow him, we can... You can't follow him, Yarrow points out. Oh, Beck, she's right. Xander can climb the redwood, but the kids can't get down that way. They're too small and weak. He'll have to climb up, with our extra rope tied to him. Then he'll have to maneuver onto the branch holding their bubble, tie the rope to that, and swing around the bubble to the access point on the bottom. From there, he'll have to brace the rope with his own weight and strength, while one by one, the kids climb down. He needs the rope. If I climb down after him, the rope is still attached up here. There will be no way to release it. I have to lower him down, then untie the rope and drop it down to him. I have to trap myself up here so that he can save the kids. Bicking wonderful. If only Xander were awake so he could get himself down. As it is, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it. But I have to. What if he doesn't regain consciousness once he's down? I'm operating on the assumption that he just received a higher dose and will be out longer than I was. But what if I lower him down and he doesn't wake up? I pace the bubble for a moment, trying to come up with any other option. I can lower myself and go for help, but
But this isn't Harmonia. I have no idea where we might be. There's no guarantee I'll find any help. As crazy, as risky and uncertain as my plan is, it's the only thing I can think of. My surroundings take on an orange glow as the fire comes closer, passing from treetop to treetop where the boughs touch. I try again to wake Xander up, pinching him, slapping him. I'm tempted to break one of his fingers, but I don't quite go that far. At last, I give up and try to pick him up. Well, that's not going to work. He outweighs me by almost 100 pounds. I'm strong, but not that strong. Instead, I roll him out of bed, ignoring Yarrow's satisfaction when he hits the ground with a thump. I roll him to the access hole, which is hard enough. Then I try to figure out how to attach the rope to Xander. Even though I can't lift him, I think if I loop the line around the bed and around my body, I can belay him down. Mira showed me a technique that a smaller person can use to transport a much bigger person's weight. It won't be easy, but I have to do it. I roll him back and forth, trying to tie the rope around his hips and legs in a harness that won't slip off, even as he hangs unconscious. I run back to the glass and try to signal to the children that help is on the way. Oh, great Earth, no. I thought we had more time. The fire isn't traveling in the path I'd predicted. As it scorches the dry needles and makes the sap spark, the terrible inferno has changed course. It is only one tree away from the children. I can see their terrified, frantic faces. They are pounding on the glass, begging me to help them. But I'm doing the only thing I can do. I check the knots one last time on Xander's improvised harness. As I'm reaching around his waist to check the last knot, I feel his hand clamp down on my wrist. What the... He begins groggily. His mind may be confused, but his body is perfectly awake and holds me in a vice-like grip. Suddenly, his eyes fly open. He takes in my face, the rope, the hole, the long drop, and shoves me backward. Off guard, I go down easily, and in a second, he's on top of me. What were you trying to do, city scum? Hang me? Before I can stop him, he's looped the end of the rope around my neck. I manage to get my hands up between it, but he's pulling it tight, and I can only keep a little slack to breathe and talk. Wake up, Xander! He still looks bleary. It's a test. You have to get down. The children! But he picks up the rope and uses it to shake me. Shut up. I've had enough of you. I don't know what's going on, but this is the last time you cross me. He shakes me until my head lulls, tightening the rope each time as I buck beneath him. Save them, I gasp, and slip out one of the hands that is protecting my throat. As the noose tightens more, I use that hand to point to the children in peril. Trust me. Let me lower you down. He still doesn't completely understand what is going on. I know how I felt when I first came out of the drug-induced stupor, hazy and disoriented. I couldn't latch on to more than one idea at a time. That's what Xander is doing now. He sees his enemy, he sees rope, and he comes to the worst conclusion. Finally, he follows my finger and sees the kids. He releases me instantly, and I scramble up, rubbing my throat. No, you doomed them, I cry. The fire has taken hold on the children's treetop. It eats through the branches, like a living thing, growing, devouring. I can see the children screaming. One of them takes a desperate risk and jumps out of the access door, dropping 50 feet. She falls into a crumpled heap, unmoving. The next instant, the glass bubble shatters from the heat. I turn away, hiding my face in my hands. You could have saved them! I cry accusingly. If you hadn't fought me, you could have saved them. I feel the heat growing around us, and through my fingers, I see a flickering orange glow as the fire consumes our tree too. I don't care anymore. I hear the sound of our bubble exploding, but I feel no pain,
and the world goes black. Twelve. I wake up. A stretch. A sigh that turns into a dramatic, jaw-popping yawn. Great. Another day in paradise. A paradise without a single boutique, or beauty salon, or nightclub. A paradise without a single pill or bicking swig of alcohol. I scowl, then smooth my face. I think about the frown lines on Mom's face. I know full well that a sour expression can age a person way beyond their years. Of course, she had a lot of responsibilities as chief of intelligence for all of Eden, but I sit up, my heart racing. I'm not that person. In the first hazy awakening of my brain, I was convinced I was Yarrow. For a moment, Rowan didn't exist. It's a terrifying sensation to think you're losing yourself. It's something I face every moment of my life now. I force myself to take deep breaths, to calm down, to think about who I am, where I am, what is happening. I am Rowan. I am in Harmonia, freed from Eden by Egopan. My mother is Rosalba, not Elena. Stupid girl, Yarrow says. You need me. I shake my head, trying to bury her, and continue the litany that will fix my real identity in my head. Rowan. I am Rowan, a second child. I am 17. I just completed my passage test. The passage test. I know I completed, but somehow the details are fuzzy. I was running through the woods. Someone was hurt. There were goosebumps on my arm. Cold water. Beyond that, I can't remember. Yarrow pushes insistently against my consciousness, but I shove her aside. She is determined this morning. But I have more important things to do than listen to her whine about the lack of coffee and parties and pills. I need to find out how I ranked on the test. Mom! I bellow. There's no answer. What time is it? Light is shining strongly through the clear walls of our treehouse, but I can't tell the direction. It could be mid-morning or mid-afternoon. I stand and stretch, balanced on the balls of my feet, hands high above my head. My hummingbird embroidered tunic lies in a crumple on the floor. Its former beauty is marred by mud and sweat and blood. It reminds me of something. Of course it does, you fool, Yarrow says. Don't you remember? I shudder up as fast as I can and head downstairs to the communal room. I am not in the mood for her griping today. Mom, I call again, but there's no one else here. I guess I'll have to wait a bit for my results. I head back upstairs to shower and dress. When I'm done, I stand on a chair to get a better view and look toward the village green. From just the right angle, I can see a sliver of the center of town through the trees. I'm hoping I can catch a glimpse of Mom or Mira. I'd rather find Mom first, though. I'm not at all confident about my results, and if I didn't do well, it will be easier to take it in her comforting presence. If only I could remember how I did. It should seem more strange to me, but somehow I don't feel the need to dwell on it. Perhaps I am learning serenity. No, you bicking idiot, Yarrow screams in my head. You were given too many drugs to remember, and your head is muddled. But I'm separate from the rest of your brain, and I remember perfectly. Just listen to me. She forces my Rowan self to yield, and suddenly I'm flooded with memories from the previous day. Each test comes back to me in perfect detail, especially the last one. The terrible choice of saving Xander and sacrificing myself. The failure of my plan, thanks to Xander's unthinking hate. The children dying. It wasn't real, Yarrow reassures me. None of it. You were unconscious, but the part of me in your head isn't as easily controlled. And I was conscious when the whole bubble turned into a screen. The fire, the trees, the children, it was all a sophisticated vid projected inside the sphere. The children are safe.
I ask hopefully. There never were any children. It was all a test. Was Xander really there?
Yes, Yarrow says in my head. Then she chuckles. And for the rest of your life, I can remind you that you slept with Xander.
Shut up, I say, but I'm not angry. I'm just happy that this is finally over. But I still don't quite get how Yarrow can know things. I don't.
I am a part of you, and also apart from you. You've compartmentalized me so well that what happens to the Rowan aspect of you doesn't touch me.
Your brain has rewired itself.
Might prove useful to have a backup personality if Mom tries to mess with yours again.
Don't call that horrible woman Mom, I shout.
Sorry, old habits.
Now let's go find out how you did on the test.
Looks like a lot of activity going on in the village. Something's up.
She's right. There's more bustle than I'd expected in the sliver I can see of the village green. This is such a well-ordered place, people seldom need to hurry. But now I see people in the distance, running in and out of my field of vision. Something is definitely up.
It must be that the results are in. I can't wait for Mom to come home. I have to know now. I hurry to the village green, where I find a lot of people clustered. There are two or three others from the test, but not Mom or Mira.
Congratulations, Quinn says. You really deserve it.
I thank him, my hopes rising as I press forward to where at least two dozen people are looking at a projection with a list of names.
Good job, Rowan,
someone says, but I don't even notice who as I strain to see. If they're congratulating me, I must have been ranked first, right? But when someone finally passes me the paper, and I scan it for my name, my heart sinks. Second tier. It's Xander's fault. I know I would have ranked first tier if I hadn't been partnered with him for the fire trial. Second tier is very respectable, and that's why I'm getting so many congratulations. But it's not high enough to become an elder, to be trusted with the highest technology, the secrets of Harmonia that I know must exist. I'll have access to some, just like Carnelian. But I'm worried it won't be enough to help me in my quest to save my friends. It's okay, I tell myself. It was just an idea, a nebulous notion that might have helped. It's not like I had a concrete plan that was ruined. Still, it makes my goal seem even more like an impossible dream. I was so eager to see my results that I didn't even look at the rest of them. What I see makes me feel a little better about my achievement. Only three of us managed to get the second rank. Me, Mira, and Xander. That gives me some satisfaction. At least he wasn't rated first. That must be burning him up. Quinn and most of the others were put in the third tier. Lata, to no one's surprise, is in the fourth. Then I check my mom's rank. I can't believe it. Suddenly, there is a commotion at the far end of the green, near the Hall of Elders. Two of the younger, stronger elders are carrying something between them. It takes me a moment to realize it is a stretcher. Whoever is on it is covered. Dead? Why else would they cover someone?
Who is it? People call as they hurry to help. What happened?
Is it one of the testers? With a sick suspicion, I think it might be my mom, and I run to the fore of the crowd. With that rank I just saw. But we're shooed away by the elders, who assure us that it's nothing to worry about, everything is under control, and an announcement will be made shortly.
None of our friends or family are hurt, rest assured,
Elder Knight says. I hear sighs of relief all around me. Mine is among them. We mill for a moment. The people of Harmonia have been conditioned to help. We're a community, and when something is wrong, we all feel like we have to pitch in. I can tell they feel awkward for not having any task to do in what is obviously some kind of crisis. We all watch the Hall of Elders without seeming to do so, waiting to be needed. Suddenly, to my intense relief despite what Elder Knight said, my mom comes out of the hall. She ignores the villagers' questions and heads straight to me. She's flushed and out of breath.
Hey,
she says, with a brightness I can tell is forced. You were ranked in the second tier. Well done.
She sounds excited, but I still feel crushed, and it shows.
Oh, sweetheart.